Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute or so past the hour. This is Friday on the front porch, on the horn. I'm Bob. The week is at an end. And we got 3 hours to work everything out. Sorry about last night. A couple of things combined to make life a little bit difficult. On the one hand, the connectivity monster was on top of me. And on the other, my youngest daughter was busy having her appendix out. So I'm a little less than fresh as a daisy right now. I will beg your indulgence. Who am I kidding? I'm zonked. I need sleep. For those of you who are wondering, she did great. She passed through the surgery with flying colors. She was adored by the staff there. When they wheeled her into her room after the surgery, as she began to sober up, she said, "Where's my gift basket?" Yeah, my 13-year-old wants swag, baby. Even if it's hospital swag. But today is Friday on the front porch. That means everything is wide open for discussion. It goes without saying that there is no resolution down Coal River Way. The agony mounts as the hope wanes. We know now, and I don't know how closely you followed this, but they sent the rescue teams in a couple of times. And guess what? They had to come back out again because the place was still toxic. And then they went in and found out that the thing had caught fire. Now, there is a way to neutralize those noxious gases. And they'd drilled several boreholes, tried to pump the noxious gases out. And then they thought, you know what? You know what might do good here? Let's pump some nitrogen down into the mine. Not particularly good for breathing, but also not good for methane gas either. It took days. MSHA begged. The government begged. Massey, not so much. They drugged their feet. Nitrogen's expensive. Life is cheap. Sorry, bastards. Sorry, sorry, bastards. As I said, a fire broke out in the mine. That doesn't bode well. The data piling up from all of this is absolutely stunning. The Labor Department was very clear in saying that Massey dragged its feet getting nitrogen for the mine rescue. But that's okay because CEO psychopath Don Blankenship has told his company's shareholders that the media reports that safety lapses led to this here mine disaster are completely unfounded. The safety of our members has been and will continue to be our top priority every day. Media reports suggesting that the UBB tragedy was the result of a willful disregard for safety regulations are completely unfounded. Our lost time incident rate has been better than the industry average for 17 of the past 19 years. Improving significantly in recent years. These improvements have been achieved through concerted effort and significant investment. Really? Significant investment? Well, we spent some money on it, Bob. I hate to spend money on safety, but God dang it, the last time we had people killed, I got my ass sued off, so we made a significant investment. Since the passage of the Minor Act in 2006, we've worked hard to implement the requirements of the Minor Act, including the usage of tracking devices and shelters. Media coverage. You know how it is with the liberal media. Media coverage of the UBB incident has referred to safety violations issued to UBB by MSHA without placing numbers in context. Isn't that always the way with the right winger when you bust them? You didn't get the context. Without placing the numbers in context. Since January 2009, UBB has had less than one violation per day of inspection by MSHA, a rate consistent with national averages. We do not condone any violation of MSHA regulations, and we strive to be in compliance with all regulations at all times. Most of the citations issued by MSHA to UBB in the last year were resolved on the same day they were issued. Then why didn't you pay the fines, Don? Why are they still being challenged? Why were there withdrawal orders issued, but no withdrawal took place? Oh, there are an abundance of questions out there. And I just found a West Virginia blog here that looks kind of interesting. Can't tell quite what this guy's all about. Calls himself Hippie Killer. The name of his blog is Fifth Column. But wait, get the tagline for the blog. There's a lot of bad wood underneath the veneer. You ever heard that before? I've heard that line somewhere before. Oh yeah, every night here. But apparently this writer, with a rather strange name, has a question. Why is Joe Manchin sucking Don Blankenship's woohoo? And that was posted today. And you know what? It's kind of a valid question. But then again, when you let Don Blankenship loose, crazy things happen. Let's go back to June 2009. In an interview that Don Blankenship gave. In regard to compliance issues and so forth. I think you'll find this interesting.
Are you concerned that the safety regulations or the safety factors in your industry, particularly through Massey, are being complied with?
Well, they're very difficult to comply with. There's so many of the laws that are, if you will, nonsensical from an engineering or a coal mining viewpoint. A lot of the politicians get emotional, as does the public.
Yeah, see, we get all emotional when miners get blown up and fried and killed and buried and drowned. And we get all emotional. We're just emotional. We're illogical. Right.
About the most recent accident, and it's easy to get laws on the books that are not truly helping the health or safety of coal miners. And I think we need to be very pragmatic and very careful when we're passing laws of that nature to make sure that we create as much safety and as much health as can be created for each of the resources we expend.
You feel you have a good safety record at Massey?
Did you hear that? Create as much health and as much safety as we can for the resources we expend. That is the textbook definition of what Hannah Arendt referred to as a little Eichmann. The life of miners is not topmost in Don Blankenship's mind. The safety of miners is not topmost in Don Blankenship's mind. Sums of money expended that do not go into his pocket or into the shareholders' pockets or do not go to retire previous debt, that's at the top of his mind.
Well, it's been 19 of the last 20 years. It's been far better than the industry average. We've had very good success on the safety and the environmental side.
Thank you.
On the safety and the environmental side. Woohoo!
Yeah, because poisoning the entire community at Printer Holler. Yeah, that's what I call success. But that, you know, that kind of gives you an idea of where we are in terms of this Friday on the front porch. But there's other stuff as well. And how do you not cover this story? We go to Holiday, Florida. Texas Betsy sent this along to me late last night, and I just kind of went, oh, no. Holiday, Florida, where a 24-year-old youth pastor is accused of sending dirty text messages to a 14-year-old girl at his church. He was arrested this past Wednesday. 24-year-old church youth pastor Cecil Wayne Say was charged with transmission of material harmful to minors, which, as it turns out, is a third-degree felony. Yeah, he sent some real dandies. Man, when the Pasco County Sheriff's Department hauls out words like lustful, he sent several lustful text messages over the course of several weeks to the minor, expressing his restless desire to be with her. Oh, Jesus. It was a dark and stormy night. Purple prose. I have a restless desire to be with you. Of course, then again, he also said, I touch myself thinking of you like I never should. If you were here, would you kiss me like that? Now, meanwhile, ever concerned about issues of liability, Pastor Brian Brown, the lead pastor at Bay Point Church, where he was the youth minister, he said the individual has been dismissed and is no longer with the church. Each employee and volunteer must undergo a criminal background check. This policy was enforced and in effect under the terms of Mr. Say's employment. Mr. Say did give an interview to ABC Action News, where he said, this is all a misunderstanding. And you know what? Praise Jesus, charges against me going to be dropped. If you were here, would you touch me like that? I touch myself thinking of you.
I love myself. I want you to love me. When I feel down, I want you above me. I search myself. I want you to find me. I forget myself. I want you to remind me. I don't want anybody else. When I think of Jesus, I touch myself.
Understanding. Charges gonna be dropped. I was lusting after for Jesus.
I love myself. I want you to love me. When I feel it down, I want you to love me.
is the Divinyls. I Touch Myself. How do you let that go? Going out to youth minister Cecil Wayne Shea. I have a restless desire to be with her. By God, he's already working on the preacher speak, isn't he? How long before he shows up doing a Jimmy Swagger? I have sinned against you. Oh! No, but there's more where that came from. This guy happens to be Protestant. We could run over to Memphis. Who turned the darn ringer on? I hate the ringer. Before we get to Memphis. No, let's go to Memphis first. In Memphis, we take you to Father Juan Carlos Duran, who arrived there in 1999 from, he was a Dominican. I don't know if that means that he was from the Dominican Republic or that he was a member of the Dominican Order. I'm guessing Dominican Order. He had a one-year contract to minister to the growing number of Hispanic parishioners at the Church of the Ascension in Raleigh, Tennessee. And as the Memphis Commercial Appeal notes, it appeared to be a match made in heaven. Bishop J. Terry Stibe said, we desperately needed someone to work with our Hispanic community. And the candidate they had was Juan Carlos Duran. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't too long before Juan Carlos Duran, Father Juan Carlos Duran, was in a car or alone with a John Doe of 14 tender years saying, I just remember him asking me in the car or asking when we are alone, please, please, let me give you oral sex. Stuff like that. I can't remember the exact number of occasions, but it was multiple. The court only recently unsealed the records. It took a year for the parties to go through it and black out the names of the minor victims. It took them a year because there were 10,000 pages. Apparently, at least 15 Roman Catholic priests have been accused of sexual misconduct over about 40 years in the Memphis diocese. And when they were accused elsewhere, they were moved from one diocese to another. You know, sort of like Chinese checkers with pedophiles. The victim who was interviewed said, it just drives me crazy because I feel like trash. I feel like trash, you know? That's what I feel like. It makes me upset. Father Duran, by the way, had plied him with booze and exposed him to pornography. The Memphis Diocese settled all of this for $2 million last year. The Dominicans, it was the order. The Dominicans were in on the settlement as well. The lawyers have noted that even a cursory background check, you know, like they ran on the youth pastor Cecil Warren Shea. Oops, that one didn't. No. I lost it. Oh, well, I just realized where that line with youth minister Cecil Warren Shea comes from. Okay, romper room time. Everybody in the room who's ever read Joseph Heller's masterwork, Catch 22, raise your hands. Yet through the magic of internet radio, I can see the hands out there, and I know there are a number of them up. He has a restless desire to be with her. Come on. Remember when Yossarian had refused to fly again and had checked himself in to the infirmary tent? And because he was an officer, he was capable of being upright and functional, he was given the task of censoring the enlisted men's letters home. You know, for a while he sat there, according to Joseph Heller, and he would only censor definite articles. On another day, he would merely censor indefinite articles. But finally, even that wasn't artistic enough, and ultimately, he wound up censoring a letter, every word in it, except the salutation and the closing, and then at the bottom signed, "I yearn for you tragically, A.T. Tapman, Chaplain." I have a restless desire to be with her. Not so much with Father Duran. Hey, kid. You want a shot? Hey, look here. I've got some Zima. No, wait. Okay, I've got Smirnoff's. How about some Mike's Hard Lemonade? Speaking of hard, Memphis. Memphis. Not Munich. Memphis. Talk about your Memphis Blues. Oh, that's only a little bit disturbing. No, that's a lot disturbing. But, you know, what do you want? Corruption runs rampant through that organization. That's really all there is to say about it. But before we wrap that notion up, it is worth noting that attorney Karen Campbell, representing the John Doe plaintiff, said in court papers, the Southern Dominican province knew Duran had committed prior acts of sexual abuse before placing him in Memphis and therefore never should have placed him here. Additionally, a review of Duran's resume with a 31-year gap should have alerted the diocese to inquire into his background. Bolivian-born, expelled from the Franciscan Order in 1985 for sexually abusing a boy in Bolivia. But later on, after he was accepted by the Dominicans, you know, if you get thrown out by the Franciscans, I guess it's a victory if the Dominicans get you. The Dominicans knew of his past, but they moved him from assignments in Panama, Miami, St. Louis, and Memphis, and always gave him good references. It was while he was at St. Louis University in 1998, a father of three little boys told campus police that Duran fondled himself in front of them at an indoor campus pool and later watched them undress in the locker room. Ay, de Dios. Duran was briefly detained, but no formal charges were filed. Jesus, God. Then a month later, in January 1999, the Dominican Order issued him a letter of good standing that declared that Father Duran was of good moral character and made no mention of the St. Louis problems or the Bolivian problems. It was in July of 1999 that Duran arrived in Memphis at the Church of the Ascension, giving an entirely different meaning to the word ascension. And that's where he abused the 14-year-old John Doe. How was he punished? Well, he was removed from the parish. I don't know what it says when it removed his faculties. What they said? I didn't know. Is the Roman Catholic Church got zombies? They suck his brains out. They removed his faculties and returned him to his Dominican community. Oh, that means he was no longer going to be working there. That's what happens when your faculties get removed. He was, this is arcanery from the church. He was laicized. You know, another word that you really don't want to be using in a story like this. That means they drummed him out, you know, tore his buttons off, broke his crucifix or something, you know, branded, and he went back home to Bolivia. There is an outstanding warrant for the man from the St. Louis Police Department accusing Duran of raping a teenage boy in 1999 while he was at St. Francis de Sales Church in St. Louis. that warrant has never been served. Whew. Well, no big deal. At least that's the word from Spanish Bishop Bernardo Alvarez, who came to the defense of rapist priests. You know, kiddie rapists. I'm going to give you the translation. I assume it's a translation from Spanish. I can't imagine what the Spanish must be. But the English translation is as follows. There are 13-year-old adolescents who are underage and who are perfectly in agreement with, and what's more, wanting it. And if you're careless, they will even provoke you. Yep, that's right. Little preteen sluts who want father to do that to them. They're perfectly in agreement with it, and what's more, they want it. And if you're careless, they will even provoke you. Stay thirsty, my friends. Jesus. Well, you know, it's moments like this you were reminded of the last words of the Wicked Witch of the West. What a world, what a world, what a world, what a world. Oh, my beautiful evil. Now, I don't know where Spanish Bishop Bernardo Alvarez is coming from, apart from Spain, but at least in this country, we have this thing called statutory rape. And the nature of statutory rape is that no matter whether the little preteen slut, the preteen boy toy agrees or not, the law deems him incapable of consenting by reason simply of his age. It doesn't matter if he says, do me, father, do me all night long, or stands up and sings, I touch myself to him. Simply by virtue of his age, he is incapable of consenting. There are 13-year-old adolescents who are underage and who are perfectly in agreement with, and what's more, wanting it. And if you're careless, they will even provoke you, Tattoo. Jesus Christ. No, not Jesus Christ. Jesus wept. So... Well, it's a starting place, and we've got more lunacy, and we got lunacy out the gazoo this evening. And it is, of course, the weekend, and I have to give you some program updates. Rick Smith's program, the Rick Smith Show, will be coming to you from Pennsylvania both Saturday and Sunday. But I have received correspondence from Cynthia Black of Action Point, and she says. Greg Pallast is on his way to London. Chris is down with some nasty flu bronchitis combo. Me, taxes. So we're taking the weekend off. So, no fresh Action Point this weekend. Dadgummit. But, you know, people have lives and people have, things that get in the way of doing radio sometimes. Texas Betsy, who is quite fluent, tells me that willing is translated de acuerdo. Come on, Betsy, just write me the whole sentence, and then I'll say stay thirsty, my friends, after it, and Jesus. De acuerdo. Thanks, Betsy. One thing worth noting, by the way, before we go to a break and then before we go to your phone calls, and this has to do with the weekend as well. You know, last week that Caribou Barbie's program premiered. Real American Stories, was it? You know, Real American Stories on Fox, interviews that Sarah Palin didn't do. It was to say the least, not impressive. But you know what? you know, just the same way that I was reminded of A.T. Tapman Chaplin, I yearn for you tragically. My mind goes all over the place. And when I looked at the name of that show, at Real American Stories, Real American Story, Real American, and I thought, Real American, Real American. Oh yeah, of course, on the campaign trail, she said, "You are the real Americans," right? You know, not those communists in New York and Boston and Seattle and Portland and San Francisco. No, the real Americans, the real Americans in Busted Knuckle. So yeah, I get that. But it was like an itch I couldn't reach to scratch, and that Real American, it kept sort of banging into my head, and then I realized it. I've been hearing that for years. Somebody call the legal department at InBev Budweiser Anheuser-Busch. Because damned if Fox has not ripped off one of the single most effective, hilarious advertising campaigns of all time, to wit, this.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Bad Toupee Wearer.
Mr. Really Bad Toupee Wearer.
More than any neon sign or exploding scoreboard ever could, your chrome dome cover says, "Hey guys, look at me."
What could you be thinking?
You think it looks natural, but it couldn't look phonier if it had a chin strap.
Couldn't pull a blind man.
Made of space-age fibers, it can repel anything. Rain, wind, snow, and especially young women.
I don't think so.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Stud in a Rug. Then crack open another for that thing on your head. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I don't think it's on straight. Those things are genius. And I guess, did Real American Stories air again last night? Did I done missed it? Well, that's okay. We've got some excerpts from the Real American Stories. I'm sure it'll be rerun over the course of the weekend. Lots of Real American Stories out there. Real American Stories like this.
Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Big Pet Snake Owner.
Mr. Really Big Pet Snake Owner.
No walks, no barking, no picking up food. Just the remote chance it might strangle you. Sure, dogs are faithful companions, but can they swallow a sheep whole?
Totally awesome.
It's not as creepy as a tarantula, but you probably have one of those, too.
One big happy family.
And best of all, it doesn't hurt your social life to be known around town as the guy with the giant snake.
96 inches.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Slither. We'd like to shake your hand. But first, put away your snake. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be back in a minute. I gotta collect my wits. Going out to Father Duran. Yeah, how's that $2 million judgment working out for you? Oh, well, he's back in Bolivia. Fresh meat, baby. Yeah, this is Front Porch Friday. Professional speaker. Don't try this at home. This is Front Porch Friday on the horn. And let's, a couple of lines open if you want to get the conversation started. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Damned phone ringer is supposed to be off. This is Blank, Stag, and Newport, Nassel, Frankel, Nassel, Banks, North Rising. But anyway, if you want to get the conversation started, you know how to do that. Just jump right in line. Let's see, three out of six open if you want to jump in. Let's go straight away to caller one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, is that me?
That would be you.
Oh, wow. Hello, Bob. This is Glenn from the UK.
Oh, Glenn, good to hear from you.
Can you understand me all right? Is my accent easy enough to follow?
It just sounds like home to me.
Well, that's great. Well, I've been enjoying your program for some little while now. Mike Malloy tuned me onto it, and Vigum, he comes up with some good recommendations at times, doesn't he?
Oh, he does indeed. He's a prince.
Well, I certainly did your impassioned program on Monday talking about this latest mining disaster, and given that I live in South Wales, which was very big on mining, we're no strangers to mining disasters around here, and maybe all my family, apart from my parents, come from up the valleys where mining was basically the employment, and not very many of them lived past the early 60s at the most. Maybe all of them that survived their retirement then passed away due to, the sort of
black lung, industrial accidents, broken bodies.
Yeah, pretty much. And disasters were pretty commonplace. The pit bell would go, the siren, and people would just come on down to the pit head, wait around there to see whether there was any news or what was going to happen. That was a fairly regular occurrence. My grandmother used to regale me with tales like this when I was a kid.
Some things never change, Glenn.
Things don't seem to change too much. We've just offshored it. That's what's so terribly annoying. South Wales is, maybe I'm biased, but I personally think it's one of the most beautiful areas in the world, and an awful lot of it has been despoiled by coal pits, some of which have been planted and grassed over now. Vast areas of the ground just dredged up with open cast mining, as we call it here. I'm not sure if you use the same term.
Strip mine? Is that what we call strip mining?
Yes, that probably would be it, where you just delve straight into the ground rather than... let me just transfer you to a landline rather than this cordless. Hello, does that give us any better signal?
You're just fine.
All right. And, of course, we've had our share of disasters when these coal tips have just become unstable. There's a place called Aberfan.
I'm well familiar with the name.
Oh, gosh. Well, you mentioned that to anybody in around this area, and they know what that was all about. I'm surprised it's reached all the way over there as well.
Glenn, we know about Aberfan because we know about Buffalo Creek here, and we know the grim death of similar nature that looms over virtually the entirety of the Coal River Valley. You know, that's one of the things about the coverage of the disaster. Most of those reporters who are sitting at Marsh Fork Elementary School. And was an elementary school not crushed at Aberfan?
Yes, it was. It's actually pronounced Aberfan.
Aberfan, okay.
We've got a slightly different alphabet in Wales. If you've got a double F, that's pronounced as an F. If you've got a single F, it's pronounced as a V. And there's only, I think it's 23 letters in the Welsh alphabet. So that accounts for that.
And the double D is a what?
A double D is like a TH.
That's what I thought. So, Gwyneth.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Exactly. Sorry, I interrupted.
No. That's okay, because like I said, it sounds like home to me. There's a significant chunk of my family that is Welsh.
Right.
So
I have heard you mention that actually on a couple of occasions, and your caller Brian from New Hampshire. A quick shout out to him. I love hearing him call. He's so informed and so impassioned. But I've got to tell him, Wales is not the west part of England. He'd be
no. Wales is Wales.
He'd be strung up if he said that.
I understand completely. You know. I still get all misty when I watch Henry V and I see that lecture that scene wherein Captain Fluellen queries Henry V about raising a leak on St. Davy's Day.
Yeah, maybe he's thinking of the Davy lamp or something. Have you ever seen How Green Is Our Valley?
Yes.
Or How Green Was My Valley?
Yes.
That's always a very good one as well. I think that travels quite well.
But what I was going to say, to the extent that Aberfan involved a school, we know about it here because that very place where the reporters are gathered and the governor is gathered and all the first responders and all of that are gathered right now with the mine disaster is at Marsh Fork Elementary School, and that school sits literally 100 yards from a toxic coal prep plant and 400 yards below 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste.
My God, you have mentioned this before, haven't you?
Yes.
It gives you shudders to think about it. It's just a time bomb with an unstable fuse. My God.
Yeah, and the dam that holds it back is leaking at the toe, Glenn.
It sounds like the start of a bad novel, doesn't it?
It really does. But what it is every day in the sacrifice zone of the United States. You know, you will not have any troubles as you read the news stories about this latest disaster. You will have no problem finding quotes from residents down there who say, it's just what we do, and these things happen. But you know what, Glenn? These things don't just happen. These things happen when people are negligent, when they put money ahead of human life, when they put profit ahead of safety and well-being. They don't just happen. But there is a mentality that has been screwed into the brains of people in that region where they think that it is their lot in life that someday they just, you know, their husband, a woman's husband gets up, goes off to work, rolls the dice on the way out of the door, and they come up snake eyes and he doesn't come home.
Yeah. Yeah, or comes home with a pair of crushed legs or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that's what always gets me. And the same with offshoring. It's just the same. Oh, you know, these things just happen. You know, we had to shut down all the factories, and we had to offshore everything to China because, you know, everybody else is doing it. As if we're talking about some immutable law of nature, not policy, which people decide to do because it's financially expedient. Virtually all our mines are shut down now, and probably that's no bad thing. But it's only because we're using just as much coal as we used to for our coal-powered fire stations and so on, despite the fact that we're an island which is blasted by wind all around and is surrounded by some of the most turbulent seas, probably to be found around any island this size. And do we use any of that? No, do we, hell? We just burn up the coal because it's financially expedient, it's quick, it's cheap, we just do it like that.
And it's good for certain exclusive small demographic groups of people's wallets.
Oh yes, yes, it's highly profitable, especially when you don't have to pay people to do a safe job to extract the lousy stuff anyway. You what we did basically after Thatcher declared war on the working class and in the mid 80s. Initiated the entire shutdown of our mining industry. We just buy our coal from Colombia. Well, it started off with Colombia. It's probably China now. And there were children being sent down the mines in Colombia.
Oh, the Colombian mining circumstance, Glenn, is a horror past horror. Everything that was ever predatory in Wales or the coal digging regions of Germany or the bad days of the mine wars of Appalachia. That's all present in spades in Colombia. It is nothing for the coal company to go out and hire some right-wing death squad to go and put put a bullet behind the ear of a labor organizer who wants nothing more than Sundays off to go to church.
Yeah.
Well, and your coal probably is still coming from Colombia.
Yeah. Oh yes. And with FARC, the Marxist rebels providing cover for all these death squads, you can really get up to some severe mischief there and just blame it on terrorists or rebels or whatever.
Oh, Colombia has a horrible human rights record to this day. And they're the one country that the U.S. Steadfastly props up because they are the last right-wing dictatorship standing in the region. Everyone else has gone to the left.
They're dropping like dominoes, aren't they? Well, there's nothing like a war to make sure that you keep your preferred leaders in power and keep a state of emergency going, and what better than a war on drugs? Well, we've been losing it for forever, but that's no reason to change policy, is it? Good Lord, no. And besides, you've got your prison industrial complex over there to keep happy. Well, we used to, my wife and I, actually lived in America for several years, in the mid-90s onwards. So, you know, I mean, obviously we don't have as full a picture as someone who's always lived there, but we do have a reasonable idea of what's going on and what the politics are like over there. We started off living in New Jersey, spent a year or so there, and spent the rest of the time, another about 4-odd years, in San Francisco, and did actually travel the country from one side to the other, and did a very circuitous route on our way there as well. Did a road trip which took about, I don't know, about 30-odd thousand miles, and took us about 3 or 4 months to complete. So we did manage to actually see about 30 states on the way, mostly the lower states, and then we did other trips out of San Francisco, back the other way, to see a few of the upper states. But apart from the sort of northeast of America, we did get to see quite a lot of it.
Well, if you saw anything of Appalachia at all, and that's the reality here, is that the Scots, the Irish, and the Welsh are very, very prevalent and predominant here, and it is in many ways it's transplanted culture.
Yes,
it was very convenient that we happened to come where the coal was.
Well, you know, we were made for the job. We were fairly small, stocky, used to that sort of work. What better people could you get? And since it's the only skill a lot of people, particularly coming out of Wales, South Wales, had, well, I suppose we fit it into place quite naturally.
Well, indeed, and I'm glad that you mentioned Margaret Thatcher, because frankly, she did governmentally what Don Blankenship has done corporately here, which is to wage an all-out war on the working class. If you would be interested, Glenn, there is a. In fact, I sat last night and watched it again. If you go to Apple Shop, APPALSHOP, appleshop.org/film/mine war, or just look for Mine War on Blackberry Creek on Google. Mine War on Blackberry Creek.
Mine War, all one word.
No, two words. Mine War on Blackberry Creek. It's a 28-minute documentary film that goes back to late 1984 and early 1985 and lets you see exactly how Don Blankenship got to be Don Blankenship.
Oh, really?
It is absolutely required viewing for anyone who wants to understand, really get his head around what this psychopath is and what he was willing to do to human beings.
No conscience whatsoever. It's truly remarkable that someone like that isn't clapped in irons and thrown in jail with full popular approval, frankly. That sort of person goes down in history.
Imagine this, if you will. If you watch the opening of the film, you will find out that he cut his teeth by collaborating with the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Oh, yes.
Now, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know.
Well, I didn't know that, but it's hardly surprising, really, is it? Funny enough, the hated dictator Thatcher was an enthusiastic supporter of the apartheid regime. She was one of the people, one of the few Western leaders who steadfastly refused to put sanctions on South Africa because on the grounds they would hurt the wrong people and so on. Of course, any old Zobie's words would have. But, you know, the fact of the matter is she loved him. She loved, what was his name, de Klerk, Boer.
Yes.
She loved Pinochet. She loved them all. You know, none of these.
Never met a fascist she didn't love.
Yeah.
Including Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah. Well, gosh, the special relationship was something else back then, wasn't it? You know,
I love the use of that term, the special relationship.
Yes, yes. Now, help me out here, if you may, if you would, please. I thought Cuba was just the furthest tentacle of the evil empire, and that's why it had to have all the very aggressive treatment, well, terrorism, blockades, and so on, waged against it, that it's had for the last 50 years. So the Soviet Union has collapsed, so surely this far tentacle shouldn't really matter anymore. But China is an absolute filthy communist dictatorship, and they do not care less about human rights, and they're granted most favored nation status as trading partner and so on. So why is Cuba still left out in...
Well, you kind of forgot about Vietnam, too, Glenn. You know, America walks on tennis shoes made in Vietnam.
Well, I'm forgetting the name. Giuliani, he was dancing around in the dress down there, wasn't he? Not more than a couple of years ago, too.
You know, what it boils down to is Cuba has embarrassed the United States for over a generation. And that's what stings.
Well, yeah, and the CIA got... Yeah, as part of their logo, successfully overturning Castro since 1955.
Right.
Or, what was it? 1959, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, and you've got geniuses sitting in Langley, Virginia, saying, I know what we'll do. We'll make his beard fall out, and then the people won't love him anymore because he has a weak chin.
Yeah, that'll make him look ridiculous, won't it?
Huh.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a book, actually, about the several hundred assassination attempts that he's... that Castro survived.
There was a poisoned swimming suit plan, or a poisoned skin diving suit, scuba suit.
And a shell, because he liked, as you say, he liked scuba diving. They were going to make an exploding shell so that he'd find this brightly colored thing and pick it up and it would kill him. I've actually got...
But, you know, at least, Glenn, we don't give up on good ideas, because later on in Afghanistan, we would drop brightly colored things that were either... anti-personnel bombs or packages of food, and they were both brightly colored the same way. So, a good idea never goes away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You wonder, is this just incompetence or is it evil intent? You do wonder sometimes.
For my money, where the CIA is concerned, it's evil intent. It just is.
Yeah, but as far as these food packages are concerned, that look pretty much like unexploded munitions, you do wonder about that. And I believe America is one of the last people to use cluster bombs, and China, well, besides Israel, of course, and China, of course, is cheerfully churning them out as well. I've actually been to Cuba three times, and... it's quite an experience. You get the impression it's a special place. It's quite unlike anywhere else you've met.
I've always wanted to go there before Fidel dies, simply to see the time capsule.
Yes, that's it.
Because it is an island time capsule from
1959. Yeah. When I was in this hotel and the entertainment came from a live piano player on a big old grand piano up in the wings, and I was sitting around this bar and just looking around, I thought, my God, there's nothing within sight to give you a clue that this is not the 1950s. There's there's no sign of any sort of technology or anything else which would give it away. It's like a perfect...
Right, save for the fact that their infant mortality rate is lower than ours. Their maternal mortality rate is lower than ours. Their literacy rate is higher than ours. Apart from that, you'd never know.
Well, yeah. That's the funny thing. The propaganda, our propaganda, is that these people are all starving and they all hate their government and so on. Well, I talked to some people and I did find some levels of discontent, but show me a country in the world where you don't. But on the whole, they love Castro. And all of them fear an attack by the U.S. because they think that might well be on the cards at any time. After all, they have been attacked.
Yeah, it's not like it didn't happen before.
They're all very well educated. Their teeth are all fine. Nobody is starving. Now, they're not very well off. A lot of people are not very well off at all. But there is a bottom level through which you will not fall. And
well, they're not losing industrial workers 25 at a clip.
Yeah.
We are.
Yeah. I know. And when there's a hurricane, they make jolly sure that they move people out of the area before the hurricane hits. They force everybody to board buses and get on out of there, and they shift them over to parts of the island which they know are going to be safe, not just leave people to drown in their attics for days after the fact and turn down offers of help from countries like Cuba and Venezuela who would actually move in and have helped them in the Mississippi Gulf Coast if they'd been given permission to do so.
Yeah, amazing how that works out. Glenn, this has been a delightful conversation, and I hope it can happen again soon, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. Meant to do it for some time. Hope I haven't tied up your line for too long.
Oh, no, not at all. Don't be a stranger, okay?
Well, I'd love to call again sometime. It's been a pleasure, and keep up the great work. I love hearing your podcast, even if I'm always running a few days behind.
Well, thank you very kindly, and I love hearing from you. Take care.
You too. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks. Bye now. And speaking of weekends, I will be departing for Pittsburgh on Sunday, so we're still figuring out what the week's schedule is going to look like. We know that there will be all-day broadcasting from the statewide Pennsylvania AFL-CIO convention. It's what happens in the evening that we are not so certain about. And before we go to the next caller, just a little reminder coming up on the next Real American Stories with Sarah Palin.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bumper Sticker Rider.
Mr. Bumper Sticker Rider.
Never has one man written so much for so many. Without you, the world may never have known you can't hug with nuclear arms. And just like you, I too would rather be fishing, or square dancing, or even shopping.
Oh, yeah.
I owe, so off to work I go. You said it, brother.
Speak the truth.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh bar to the bumper. Thanks to you, I know it's perfectly all right to honk if I'm horny.
Honk, honk, beep, beep, honk.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Now, how could you not tune in for that? Let's go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, you know, you're killing me with the Bob, please. That is the funniest campaign ever. Are you kidding me?
Those guys are geniuses. I mean, there should be a monument to them.
No, I mean, there's some choice ones. I think my favorite is the billboard at the stadium to get married guy. That one killed me. They're all really funny. You need to stop. You really do.
Hey, it's Friday on the front porch, man. We gotta have a little fun here.
Oh my God! Since I'm on that, listen. I think it was because we're the same age. The little cultural references are killing me. Okay, the Dune thing. I still haven't recovered from that. Okay. No, because the quiet voices that used to kill me. I read all the Dune books, the movie, and the talking. Yeah, that was out of control. How did you incorporate that in there? I can't even remember the context.
Oh, God. Was, oh, yeah, know? Yeah. He doesn't even need to use the voice command module. He is the Kwisatz Haderach.
Oh, my God. That's killing me. And then today you had to top it off with Stay Thirsty. Are you kidding?
Yeah, in a story about a Bolivian child abuser.
Oh, wow.
There's an especially warm place in hell for me.
No, but that commercial is outrageous. I don't, you know, most of my friends, they really don't understand why I always fall over when I see it, but come on. It's an incredible commercial. Have you seen the full blown when he's all over the world?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm still waiting for him to talk about hand-tooled Corinthian leather.
It's fantastic. I love the sort of 70s kind of motif. You know, the whole commercial.
Him in the highlight court is just murder. You know, with the sort of cheesy superimposed head on the highlight player.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And I just think maybe because, you know, we're like children of the 70s, right? And it's kind of like, are you kidding me? Anyway, they don't really, there's such a, it's just a handful of sort of commercials that just sort of really hits it out of the park.
He once had a moment of uncertainty just to see what it felt like.
Oh, God. And then when they busted out the guy, because the first time I heard that was on the radio, I'm like, what? And then I saw it on TV. I thought, are you kidding me with this? You know, I mean, what am I saying, Bob? I mean, I don't have a life, I know, but that commercial is hella funny.
There are some out there that, you know, I, God help me, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I can't help paying attention to this kind of stuff because I used to do it for a living.
Okay.
And the good stuff is exquisite. You know, I'm in love with the Old Spice body wash commercial, you know, that ends, I'm on a horse.
Oh! Yeah, no, I mean.
Dude showed up on Ellen's show and she made him recite the entire script.
Shut the heck up. Really?
Yeah, it was precious.
That's funny. No, because just when I think, you know, because for every Stay Thirsty, my friend commercial, you have shit like that Tiger Woods stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. I think it was Bart Kopp that asked earlier, is that what Ari Fleischer was brought on board for, to come up with that garbage?
No, but it's just so sick. I mean, what is he? He's some sort of corporate cyborg, that guy. Don't care, uses his dead father's voice. I mean, there's no limit to his corporate persona.
Yeah, you know, I think you're going a little rough on Tiger. I'm grateful that they didn't just dig Earl up.
Well, listen, don't hold your breath. Because, I mean, the whole commercial is just so cringy. I was like, please, Jesus, no. And everywhere I look, on the web or on the radio or TV, someone's talking about it. And I'm like, ew, because it's horrific.
It's necrophilic.
It's just bizarre. I'm like sick to death. It's like, okay, bitch, you're golfing again. Good night. You know what I mean? I'm just done. And when that commercial popped up, and I thought Nike is the most disgusting. Why don't they splice that with the women who are making the cheap ass overpriced shoes?
Oh, you mean the ones that are huffing the carcinogenic glue in Vietnam?
Yeah, why don't they splice that shit in there? I mean, they're so despicable.
If you go back to the previous college football season, Sandra, you might remember the sideline moment with the Ohio State Buckeyes, where the babbling blonde on the sideline was waxing poetic about the new titanium D rings on the Ohio State pants.
Oh,
by Nike.
No, see, I can't. You know, the whole thing is just, I mean, I can't even have words, proper words, articulating how disturbing it is for these corporations to adopt social, you know, emotional commentary to sell their crappy, you know, slave labor products. It's just,
well, I mean, you're widely read, Sandra. Are you familiar with the Northwest Native American tradition of the potlatch?
No.
Okay. Well, what would happen is these societies, you know, beautiful, magnificent carvings and all of that stuff. The cultures that lived along the Pacific Coast, Oregon, Washington, Vancouver, you know, up toward Alaska and so forth, were very status conscious. And it's been a while since I was in class, so I may be screwing this up. But eventually, the head man, in order to prove how profoundly rich he was, would throw what was called a potlatch. And he would invite everybody from miles and miles around, and everybody would just gorge themselves until it was just sickening, just massive feasting. And then at the end of the potlatch, he'd take all of his precious stuff and just set fire to it and burn it down.
Mm.
You know what? And the reason I mention all of that, Sandra, is because we live in a full on conspicuous consumption potlatch culture. People walking through Walmarts looking at lawnmowers going, this here's $50 cheaper. This Chinese one's $50 cheaper than the one what comes from America. I'll buy that. Meanwhile, that's $50 worth of cheap Chinese steel that was made with, you know, Appalachian coal. It's got the blood of an Appalachian miner cooked into it.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just disgusting. There's no... there's no discrimination on what the hell people are buying. They just see the price, and that's the end of it. And also, it's also so much cheaper now, cheaply made. But IKEA stuff, I mean, all of it is just, it lasts for a minute. It's just crap, you know? It's incredible. And I don't know, I can't even express how disgusted I was with that whole Tiger Woods thing. It's like, oh my dear Lord, enough, you know? When is it going to be enough with that guy?
I can't answer that because I'm not.
Seriously.
I don't know what it would be like to have $1 billion and think you need a billion more.
Right. There's that, and there's also the, I don't know what. You know, we're being sort of hit over the head with his need to resuscitate or whatever corporate masters need to. You know, and God help us if he wins. You see what I'm saying? I can't.
and see, I'm a golf geek. I got to say, and I'm sure I'll lose style points for this with the segments of the audience. I used to be a guy who treated the Masters like a religious ritual.
Okay.
And you know, I would sit down and watch it, and you know, at the end of it, you know, misty eyes. Yeah, I'm a marshmallow. You know, they're playing the tinkling piano and Jim Nance, and you know, and here at Ray's Creek, it was a decision making time for Jack Nicklaus. Yes, it was.
And of course, it's so nice.
Yeah, but you know what? I can't stand the notion of getting near enough a television to watch this garbage because it's at this point it's a masturbation fest over a masturbation fest.
Right, and you know, and I'm sorry. It's golf and how you think about it. There's too many references. What hole is he in now? You understand what I'm saying? I can't deal with it.
Me either. That's why I'm not. That's why I'm not there watching it because
it's totally tarnished, and we have to look at these freaks cheering him on as if he's coming back from what, war? What is this?
Hail the conquering hero.
Oh, and you know, he shot some amazing round, and it's all of it is so foul, and I just want the 60-year-old to win. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I can't deal with it. But actually, what I wanted to call about was yesterday, you know, because I do this TA work, right? So I work for this professor, and I was so proud of this man because doing lecture, he said, he all of a sudden he talked about, well, the whole coal mine accident just reminds me of, oh, all right, go to a party and get drunk and just get in my car and drive and hit somebody and, oh, well, nothing happens to me. And he actually, and these are kids he's talking to, like 18, he actually accused this corporation of murder, and he went into how white-collar crime and death is not equated to street crimes. I mean, it was just a beautiful assessment. You could have blown me over that, you know, this guy talked about massy energy as, you know, should be done for manslaughter. It was great. And it was just out of the blue, you know?
And the, you know, the question remains, can you get to him? Because there, you know, there are so many shells within shells. It's like one of those the czarist era Russian nesting dolls. There are so many shells around Don Blankenship.
Well, and it's just sort of, you know, because people can't make the connection between, you know, calling it an accident. And it's like, there's no accident. You know, they violated after violation after violation. As you were saying, they had to pump nitrogen down there because it's still...
Yeah, poisonous. But it took them 2 days to get around to deciding that they would let the rescuers have the nitrogen.
And then and you're saying them cheap bastards didn't even want to release that because it cost a little money, right?
Right. Kevin Strickland, who is the MSHA administrator on site, has not pulled punches. Joe Manchin, our governor, has been more than a little bit embarrassing. He will not look. You make Don Blankenship get up there with those dead ass eyes of his and that psychotic nature of his. You make him get up there and deal with it. But instead, Joe Manchin, the governor of this state, is getting up and, you know, being his. But Kevin Strickland said, well, it was simply put, we asked for the nitrogen and Massey dragged its heels.
No, it's sick, and it's also, it's just, I mean, are these people, are they mentally disturbed? Because you have all these men who are dead now. Had they taken care of what they needed to take care of and spent the money to make it safe, you know, it's just they cut their nose off. Now, I'm sure the mine is useless. Hopefully they'll shut it down. But did it have to cost 30 men?
They will not shut it down.
What do you mean they won't shut it down? I mean, it just seems like it's, okay, so what are they going to do? Wait for it to, they won't shut it down?
No. It will be temporarily idled until it is safe to resume mining again. But there's coal in there, Sandra, and Massey Energy has there's people standing in line who will go get the coal if these guys won't. And here's the sad part, these guys will.
Oh, Lord, so they're all just sort of waiting around to have the sort of obligatory mourning period, and then they'll be right back down there. Is that what you're saying?
Damn straight.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, I just was laughing because the share price is tumbling. I didn't check it today, but it lost hella, well.
Oh, it's nearing what, 20% off of its par value?
Whatever. I'm like, if it could just completely go away. But I guess you're right. There's still more poison down there for them to cash in on. I don't know. I just am sort of disturbed by the lack of urgency about it. And I just say that maybe because I'm so far away. Is that what I'm supposed to figure?
Yeah, kind of, because you see, the whole gig here, right now the coal market for electrical generating coal, you know, so-called thermal coal or steam coal, not so much. But the market for metallurgical coal to go to China, to go to India, is between 2 and 4 times the price. And the entire business strategy of Massey Energy is predicated on getting that stuff out of the ground, getting that stuff out of the country as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible, and where the cost cutting takes place is in human lives. The fact of the matter is, if Massey Energy, and just work with me here for a minute, Sandra, if Massey Energy settles for $10 million with the family of every person who died at Upper Big Branch, writes them a check. If they amortize that, first of all, because it's litigation related, it is tax deductible. And secondly, when you amortize that out versus the sale price of coal, Jesus, a human life doesn't come down to being the same as the price of a ton of coal.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that whole figure that goes around that the government uses of $7 million.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is, though, I don't understand. I mean, you know, maybe you have to repeat this for me because now they had a whole list of violations to the point where they almost were declared some status so the next one they could be shut down. I just was reading this article. But they escaped that because, you know, during the Bush administration, anyone can get away with anything.
Well, and it's not just the Bush administration. I mean, we're a year into the Obama administration and this thing has happened. There is a massive appellate backlog of these fines, okay?
But what I'm saying, though, is that if they were on the verge of committing violations that could shut them down, what is this?
They weren't on the verge. They were there. what had happened is, I forget exactly what the term is that MSHA uses for the type of violation, but once you've got a string of these, you accuse the company of having a pattern.
Right. That's.
And that's when, yeah. and that's when the shutdown order comes down.
Okay.
But
so
the shutdown order was never allowed to be issued.
Right. But and you're saying the situation now, it still doesn't warrant that process to.
You remember Sago? Remember Sago back in January 2006?
Yeah.
They're mining.
God. I mean, it's just, I don't understand, because I'm still stuck on 25, and there's four missing, right?
Right.
So, 29.
And two crippled in the hospital alive.
Okay, so, 29 possibly dead, injured, and some injured. This is not enough. They just want to hush it up and then start digging again.
Golden in Mar Hills. Now the sad thing is, and let me just run through this real quick by analogy. You know how whenever we talk about gun laws and gun safety, Sandra, the National Rifle Association comes out and says we don't need no new laws. We need to enforce the ones we got. You've heard that. Well, you can actually make a credible argument for that being the case here, because it was a failure of enforcement. And I mentioned the legal structure a few minutes ago, and even if it's a fine structure inside an administrative agency, the Constitution still applies, and there are issues relating to both substantive and procedural due process plus equal protection involved. So as long as that administrative process exists, it can be exploited by the mine company lawyers, and they are legion. So if I've been thinking about this quite a bit, it strikes me that we need, there's another legal concept out there called strict liability. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but basically it means if you were involved in it, you're liable for it. No questions of intent or negligence or anything along those lines. If you've done it, you paying for it.
Right.
Well, what needs to happen, I think, is we separate the enforcement from the fine structure. And there needs to be, just like there are air marshals in airplanes to keep horrible, horrible tragedies from happening at 40,000 feet. You know, like Qatari diplomats going to the restroom for a smoke and then joking at the guy with the gun saying, what do you think I was doing, lighting my shoes?
Yeah, well, apparently that's a lie, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard it, yeah.
Well, we need people inside the mine who are paid by the government with monies provided through an involuntary funding scheme from the coal companies. And those guys need to be there with air quality monitors and everything, and a working knowledge of the problems the mine has, and they need to be able to push a button and kill every bit of electricity in the mine and say everybody's getting out, no questions asked. Because until you've got the power to shut the thing down on the spot, then this is going to continue to happen. Now, the fact of the matter is, in a union mine, the union members themselves can do that.
Yeah, and they also can say no to certain situations that calls for them to work, right? I mean, they can, yeah.
But these guys can't.
Right, no, I remember hearing some union leader talk about that, and I was just sort of...
I mean, if you look at the video that was shot by CNN, I've seen several pieces where they're talking to people who are backlit wearing funny hats. Because they are afraid to have their voices or faces seen on television because even though it is illegal as hell, Massey will blacklist them.
And they're making $26 an hour, right?
That's right. What
I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm still stuck, I can't get past the elementary school. Hello, is this an elementary school that's in session?
Yes, quite. It's fortunate that this happened when it did because they're all out on Easter break.
Well, no, what I mean, though, is that this is how these kids exist.
Yes.
Okay, why is there a school, forgive me, why is there an elementary school near that, please?
the school is older than the coal works themselves. But Massey has sufficient, well, look, those coal silos that you may have seen in the background, well, there's one. Massey wanted to build a second one, but there's a law that says you can't have coal works within 300 feet of a school. So you know what Massey's remedy to the problem was? They erased the map and redrew it. And eventually won in court, all the way to the Supreme Court of West Virginia.
Okay. But yeah.
If you walk through there and you run your finger along the windowsills at Marsh Fork Elementary, Sandra, your finger will come up black with soot that those children breathe every day. Because not only is that coal prep plant next to them, across the Little Coal River is a railroad track that has millions of tons of coal in boxcars going by every day.
Well, no, but it's not even the soot. It's the invisible stuff that's scaring me.
And the invisible stuff is toxic as hell. Air quality there is a nightmare. And again, that toxic waste dam behind it is leaking at the toe.
So this is 2010, not 1910, right?
Right.
Okay, no, I'm just, you know, this is like education for me. I am just sort of stunned. I don't get how they can, you know, get up in the morning, these people. Children exposed to that? What the hell?
But you know what? If you talk to the school principal or the school teachers, they'll say, well, you know, we live in the coal fields, and this is just part of our life.
No, you said that over and over again, and I mean, I understand.
And the reason I keep saying it over and over again, Sandra, is because it permeates every last bit of the culture and existence down there.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I understand why you're doing it. It's just painting a picture that is, like, just really incredibly sad, like Stockholm Syndrome, and just, you know, just a beat down.
Well, look, I mean, when Moses was going to lead the children of Israel out of bondage under Pharaoh, there were people among the children of Israel who looked up and said, Moses, wait a minute. Pharaoh ain't great, but we get three hots and a cot, buddy. And you want us to go for a walk in the desert to meet your invisible God? You know, good luck with all that.
Well, no, but the thing is, I mean, and you've mentioned that, you know, you had people in your family, you know, worked in the mines, and you made a point of saying that there are also people who worked really hard so the next generation didn't, you know, i.e. you. But what happened to that pyramid? I mean, what's going on, you see? It seems like that, you know, getting someone to another place has...
Well,
stuff, right?
But again, I am the exception and not the rule.
Okay, so you're saying that it's...
At Southern West Virginia Community College, and I think Logan, West Virginia, they have community college classes, not in English lit, Sandra, but in how to be a coal miner.
Okay, well, where are the executives and the management coming from? What part of the society are they coming out of?
Well, Blankenship himself is the son of a single mother who was raised in one of the most brutal parts of West Virginia, a county that's called Bloody Mingo. It's where my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, was born years and years ago, a century ago. It's where the Battle of Matewan took place. And he worked, you know, he hard scrabbled his way up, went to Marshall University, got a degree in accounting, and went to work as a little pissant for Massey Energy. But they quickly recognized that he was so ruthless, so psychotic, so psychopathic, that this was the guy who could lead them to the promised land. Because, you see, their mines had union contracts. And the only way that they could maximize that economy of scale model that he more or less invented was to break the union.
Right.
And you know, that's where he comes from. You know, where do the rest of them come from? Look, the coal company lawyers... the guy who graduates number one in his class and who was number one in moot court or the trial club or whatever at the West Virginia University College of Law, he will be offered a $60,000 a year job as a first year associate, and he will spend his life carrying the briefcase for some evil old bastard who has spent an entire lifetime figuring out how to screw widows and orphans.
Right, so the coal is just there, and things are stratified accordingly, basically.
Absolutely. And, wow. And you know, the government is owned. I mentioned the other night, and I can't remember his name. I'm ashamed of myself. The first governor to ever propose a coal severance tax in which coal companies would pay money to the state for the coal that they sever from the earth and ship out at a profit. The first governor who ever proposed that was hounded from office and wound up basically a shell of his former self driving cab in Chicago.
Okay, wait a minute. See, once again, I'm gobsmacked. You're telling me that there's not a tax?
Oh, there is now. There's a pittance of a tax. It was finally passed in the 60s.
Yeah.
Maybe the 70s. I can't remember which. And it is literally pennies on the ton.
Yeah, but it's obviously not much because, I mean, you know, the community don't seem to be sharing in all these profits.
Oh, not by a long shot. I mean, for instance, you've heard me talk about the Coal River Wind Project. You know, we want to build a wind farm on Coal River Mountain, which is hard by where the tragedy is taking place right now. And, Sandra, that would provide literally millions of dollars in tax revenue yearly to the Raleigh County Commission. And the Raleigh County Commission said, well, we can't be taking sides. We'd rather have the strip mining money, which is maybe 1%.
Well, I mean,
of what the tax base would be coming from the wind farm.
Well, no, it's incredible because you have to deal with this sort of coal that destroys the environment, yet the people still can't profit off of it either. So it's incredible. And where's Washington? Nowhere, right?
Well, Barack Obama issued a statement today.
Oh, well, shit, slap me. What did he
say? Barack Obama said today, as soon as I find him, he said, now let me say a few words about what has happened in West Virginia. This has been an unimaginably difficult week for the people who live near Mont Cole. 31 workers were inside the Upper Big Branch mine when an explosion ripped through its walls on Monday afternoon. 2 were saved, 25 were lost, and for the 4 who remain missing, we are praying for a miracle. I want to offer my deepest condolences to the friends and the families of the fathers, of the husbands, and the brothers, and the nephews, and the sons who were killed in this accident. I'm also in awe of the courage and selflessness shown by the rescue teams who've risked their lives over and over and over this week for the chance to save another. They've worked around the clock with little sleep for the past few days, and this nation owes them a debt of gratitude. Now, mining has a long and proud history in West Virginia. I can almost hear Nick Rahal or Jay Rockefeller writing this paragraph. Now, mining has a long and proud history in West Virginia. For many families and communities, it's not just a way to make a living, it's a way of life. And the jobs they do in these mines help bring heat and electricity to millions of Americans. See, Barack Obama didn't even know that this was a metallurgical coal mine. So he says, it's a profession that's not without risks and danger, and the workers and their families know that, but their government and their employers know that they owe it to these families to do everything possible to ensure their safety when they go to work each day. Let's see, because mining is a tradition that's often passed down through generations, it's not uncommon to see an entire family choose this line of work, and sadly, when a tragedy like this occurs, it's not uncommon to lose almost an entire family at once. I talked to one of those people. She lost her husband, her brother, her nephew, yada, yada, yada. Through tragedy and heartache, that's the spirit that has sustained this community and this country for over 200 years, and as we pray for the souls of those we've lost, and the safe return of those who are missing, we are also sustained by the words of the psalm that are particularly poignant right now. Those words read, "You, O Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light. Thank you very much."
Oh, you know what? Where is... Oh, no, that's... I'm sorry. God, okay. Thanks, Mr. President.
Yeah, And see, I would counter, you know, never mind the Psalms quote, I would counter with the words of Mary Harris' Mother Jones. Namely, pray for the dead, fight like hell for the living. And the Wobblies, the Wobblies motto of the early 20th century, organize!
Oh, yeah, no, there was nothing in that statement to challenge the nature of the industry and the whole sort of tradition. You know, cabinet making is a nice family tradition. You know?
Sure. Plastering?
You know what I mean? It's
buggy whip making is a grand old American family tradition.
I don't know. I just sort of, you know, I'm stuck with what you were saying when it first happened. It's 2010. Can't we, you know, have robots down there doing this at this point? Or shift over to a whole different way of doing energy is the goal. But anyway, Bob, yeah, I mean, I didn't really mean to, you know, drag you into the whole mining thing. I'm sure you're well disturbed, but, you know, I just sort of, you know, need to know what's going on. It's just crazy.
I understand. And you know, I'm glad you want to know what's going on, Sandra, because it is the fact that we do not pay attention to what's going on that gets these guys dead. Because sooner rather than later, all the professional journalists are going to pack their bags, and you know, maybe they'll find out that there's another woman that Tiger Woods has sent dirty texts to, and it'll be, you know, see you later, hillbillies.
No, but also, is it true that Diane Sawyer said that it was Mountain Dew that caused them kids to lose their?
Oh yeah, that was a year and a half ago. She blamed Mountain Dew mouth.
No, she didn't.
Yes, she did.
Unbelievable. Listen, I hear your phone going, so, yeah, I'll let you go.
Yeah, I got to do something about that phone, but, yeah.
Well, no, you know, it sounds like there's people waiting. But, listen, actually, one more thing. So I see that Stevens is retiring finally.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting to see what sort of milksop will get nominated because we're afraid of Republicans.
Oh, you know what it's going to be. It's not going to be... You know, the fact that they call him liberal disturbs me because...
The most liberal man ever to sit in the United States Senate.
No, he was appointed by Ford. What was Ford, Bob?
That would be a Republican.
Okay, so what does that tell you about the state of this country?
Oh, I heard E.J. Dionne and David Brooks opining on National Public Radio earlier this evening, saying, you know, that was a different ideological era in America. When you could actually nominate someone that you didn't necessarily always agree with, but who was brilliant at what he did. Well, why is this a different era?
Why is this different?
Last I checked, the Democrats weren't the ones talking about nuclear options when a fascist was under nomination, Samuel Alito.
Oh, my. I know. And the thing is, though, I've been reading articles that say, well, Obama has to pick someone and convince everyone.
He's got to pick a moderate.
Not too left. No one said that to Bush. I am so sick to death.
No, everybody said, pick, hey, George, let's have a goose-stepping contest. Winner gets to be on the Supreme Court.
No, pick whoever you want. It's the presidential prerogative. But no, Obama, you know, may pick this woman, Ellen Kagan. Have you heard her name?
Yes.
And the reason why is because she also has this, I don't know, I can't remember the term they used. It was perfect to describe Obama and his affinity for this post partisan mentality that he so enjoys.
Yeah, well, I also heard Janet Napolitano's name brought up.
Huh?
Yeah, that's what I did.
So, it's just, so you know, I'm sorry, I'm looking at this Kagan person, and then you have Napolitano. This is like Dyke Central. And with that, I'll leave you.
All right, Sandra, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And we roll merrily along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yeah, Jim, what's up?
What's going on?
Just trying to get through a Friday.
Well, I'll tell you, you're doing a guerrilla job of it tonight. This has been a very interesting program. You know, a quantum leap here. You know, we're coming up on the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic.
We are indeed.
And when letters were written by the White Star Line to the members of family members who lost people, who were on board the ship, staff members and people who worked for the White Star Line, there was a subparagraph in those letters asking for payment for loss of uniforms and ship's kits that were issued to them by the White Star Line.
Oh, my God, I had no idea. Nothing ever changes.
You know, plus the Sean's Kelcom and Bush shows, everything changes, but it always stays the same. And I can just imagine as Don Blankenship being the CEO of that ship's company. I mean, can you imagine getting a letter of condolence after you've lost your husband, whatever, father, brother, and then asking for payment?
Oh, and see, it's been very underreported, Jim, that Don Blankenship went in the wee early hours, 2 o'clock, 2:30, 3 o'clock Tuesday morning, to tell the families of the victims what they knew, that there were 25 dead. And he was surrounded by a phalanx of no less than 9 members of the West Virginia State Police. And well, he stood up to tell the crowd, and they screamed him down and told him to get out.
Have you heard that Fred Phelps and the Westwood Baptist Church had planned to come up there and make all kinds of statements?
Well, they have already protested two or three places in Charleston. They protested at the state capitol. They protested at Temple B'nai Israel in Charleston, a couple of other places, and sent a threatening letter to the mayor of Charleston saying, you didn't protect us enough. Because what these guys are lawsuit leeches. I don't know if you saw that story recently about the guy, the people who they picketed at a soldier's funeral.
Right.
And the guy wound up paying a civil rights judgment having a civil rights judgment hung on him over the fact that somebody wasn't nice to the Westboro Baptist freaks.
Well, you know, they had planned to go to San Francisco, but I think discretion got the better part of valor for them to be going out there.
No, they've been there.
Well,
they have, and the one thing you'll notice is that they have no plans to go down into the Coal River Valley. Because
I wish they would.
Well, you know, we and I'm not trying to raise any sore spots. We in the community of people who are trying to end mountaintop removal know how violent the Massey people can be. The hard way. And frankly, I don't know, because see, these people don't have the courage of their convictions. These Westboro freaks. They have the courage of their legal acumen. Because Fred Phelps is a sewer, more than a physical sewer. He is a he's litigious.
Oh, and he's a lawyer.
He's got a daughter named Margie who is also a lawyer who signed off on this letter to Charleston Mayor Danny Jones, threatening to sue because they said Charleston police were not sufficiently protective of their rights to protest. This is a dodge that beats the dickens out of out of passing the plate.
These people have no souls. They have no sense of decency, and Fred Phelps and his fellow followers make Roy Cohn and Joe McCarthy look like angels.
And see, one of the problems that I still have with the faith in which I was raised and baptized, Jim, Southern Baptist, is the fact that Fred Phelps was ordained Southern Baptist, and the Southern Baptist Convention to this day has never rescinded his ordination. Silence is acceptance, Jim, you know?
What is it? Quitasit consentere? Under the law, silence implies consent?
Exactly.
Well, when I saw this stuff, and when I have listened to some of the people who called in and listen to your excellent reportage of what's been going on up there, and you're probably one of the only people who's really, in my estimation, has been telling the story like it is because of your, relationship with this particular coal industry and the family members who've worked in it and things like that. It's been very enlightening to me. And when they say that these people follow into these mines, well, they don't have any place else to go except to go into these mines, basically.
Yeah, but that's not an accident, Jim.
I know.
That's what happens when you build a mono economy. When you want slaves, you don't want the slaves having choices. And even if you're making $26 an hour, if that's the only game in town, you are still enslaved.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if the shackles are lined in velvet or money. It's still slavery.
Exactly. Exactly. You're 100% on target there. And like I say, during the past 8 years, MSHA and people like that, federal agencies all over, have been completely emasculated, and they have no real authority.
Right, but if we try to talk about something like that, Jim, the right wing will be out there on Fox or wherever. Well, we can't play the blame game. Well, okay, can we play the liability game? Blame doesn't matter a daggum bit to me, but the fact is, if you do not establish liability and clear lines of it, then it's going to happen again, and it's going to happen again and again and again and again. It is getting deadlier to mine coal underground, not safer, and there's a reason behind that.
And what is so terrible is this will soon be forgotten, just like Sago has been forgotten, okay? And it's going to happen again and again and again and again and again.
Jim, if you go over to crooksandliars.com, you'll have to go back a couple of pages. But a guy named Gordon Skeen, who's a real smart, sharp character, who has a passion for history and history as recorded in audio and video format, he posted from 1952 testimony given by John L. Lewis, then the president of the United Mine Workers, before the Senate of the United States. And if you listen to that audio clip, and it's not that long, the quality's not so great, but if you listen to that audio clip, you will be absolutely driven beside yourself by the fact that there's John L. Lewis literally 58 years ago talking about the very same things that killed the miners at Upper Big Branch a week ago. There's a reason for this. Money, power, influence.
Of course. And life means nothing.
You know, it was actually on the way down because there was a union in place that could try to be a little bit proactive for its own sake. But the United Mine Workers are largely broken like a dry twig. That film at appleshop.org, Mine War on Blackberry Creek, it shows you in absolutely unwhitewashed terms how it is that Don Blankenship went about the business of destroying a union in this country. He did it maliciously, he did it willfully, and he did it with malice aforethought.
Of course he did, because he was mountaineering his way to the top, and he didn't give a damn whose shoes he stepped on or whose families died as a result of his, greed.
When you are colluding with Royal Dutch Shell to perpetuate slavery in apartheid South Africa, morally speaking, you're pretty well done in my book, Jim. You know?
Oh,
and that's Blankenship.
I saw that guy on TV, and honestly and truly, I had to go take a shower. I really did. I mean, he looked like something out of a Grade B horror movie. He really did. By the way, on a lighter note, the Tiger Woods thing, just jumping here.
Mm-hmm.
That thing with his father, the most bizarre thing I have ever seen in my life. And I have a nephew who's an advertising executive in San Francisco, and he told me, he said, I thank God my company didn't put that thing out because it was just absolutely ridiculous. But last night on Jimmy Kimmel, they had a good thing about that, and it was basically Tiger Woods' mother telling him to stop thinking with his penis. it really blew the...
I will teach you what mashy niblick means. Yeah.
You saw that?
Yeah, I saw it earlier today. I saw a clip of it.
Oh, my Lord. It was, that. I honestly and truly. But anyway, so, look, have a good program and keep it coming and... I don't know what I can say other than my hearts and prayers and whatever I could emotionally offer to those people who lost family members to go out.
Thank you, Jim.
Hope that, against hope, because in my case, hope has long since been hope abandoned. Because I've seen so much stuff go on and, it was all covered up. It's just all who cares? Nameless numbers on countless lists that were carelessly mislaid. Just like they opened the movie Dr. Zhivago with,
Yep, elegantly said.
Take care, sir.
Jim, have a good weekend.
Have a good trip up to, where are you going now?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, okay. Well,
just my luck, the Pirates aren't in town, but...
Well, listen, there are a lot of good restaurants up there.
Oh, yeah, there are, and I wouldn't mind to go through and do another walkthrough of the Warhol Museum. That place is really cool.
Oh, absolutely. And be sure and do that if you can, okay?
I know how to walk there from the hotel. I learned it last year during Netroots Nation. Jim, have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk soon.
Take care. I hope so.
All right. Bye now. That's our friend Jim. And, yeah, by the way, just to let you know, I will be talking about the mining issue in West Virginia on a couple of different radio shows here in the fairly immediate future. One of them I will be talking tonight. Brad Friedman is subbing in for Mike Malloy, and I will be talking with Brad about it. And then Monday evening on the Leslie Marshall show, in the 9 o'clock Eastern Time hour, I will be talking about it as well. So if you want to check those out, do please. I encourage you to. And coming up next, coming up on Sarah Palin's Real American Stories.
Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pickle Pig's Feet Eater.
Mr. Pickle Pig's Feet Eater.
Ignoring all you know about pigs and where they live and what they step in, you look at their pickled paws and say, yummy.
Look into it.
Craving only the most daring meal, you pass up the cow tongue, skate by the head cheese, dismiss the Rocky Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
But a pig's foot soaked in pickle juice, now that's good eating.
Save me a pickle.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Pickle Pig's Feet Eater, because it takes guts to eat those feet. Light beer at Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
That's Real American Stories with Caribou Barbie, only on Fox. 11 minutes before the hour. Okay, 10 minutes before the hour. Wow, am I obsessive compulsive. This is just not healthy. Let's go to the phones, I think. Or not. There we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, it's Haven.
Oh, hey, Haven, what's up?
Oh, not too much. My condolences go out to you all up there. I've been listening to your show and everything, and the article that you put up, well, a post that you posted up a while ago was really, really interesting as far as asking, you know, the real basic question, why are we still, you know, in the 21st century, still sending people to dig coal out of the ground for electricity?
Yeah, digging in a 50-million-year-old rock that was useful in the 19th century. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, it's the 21st century, and there are no flying cars. Somebody promised us that, too, somewhere along the way, but...
James, stop this crazy thing. Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Yeah. It's,
Well, you know, I don't want to seem insensitive, because I'm not. This is heartbreaking. But the fact of the matter is, if we had started construction, if we had been able to start construction on the Coal River Wind Project, it would have paid the same or better money than what those guys going into that UBB hole were getting, and some of the dead might very well be alive today and working on a green energy future for Appalachia.
Yeah.
That makes a lump in my throat, Haven.
Right. That's a complete lack of vision on the part of, I guess, our leadership. And the one politician who I hear consistently speak out on this thing, you know, if he can get into a public venue is Jesse Jackson. He seems to, you know, consistently when he talks about poverty and usually will mention, you know, along with people who are dealing with poverty in urban areas, he will mention people who are dealing with poverty in Appalachia. But of course, I mean, people who talk about poverty and being on the outs from the American dream and that sort of thing, they really don't get much play in the media.
No. And if we're serious about the future of green energy, we need a government that's serious about the future of green energy.
Right.
And we have to come to a very basic realization that if the entirety of this country, with the exception of Appalachia, goes green, then the entire country, because Appalachia is still filthy, the entire country is still filthy, and it is not green.
Definitely. Exactly. Yeah. And that statement you read by Obama, I thought was pretty interesting that I didn't know that there was any such thing as metallurgical coal until I listened to your show. That is, who writes his stuff? He writes some of his speeches. He has a speechwriter. I assume they run this thing up the flagpole to make sure that, talk with people who are there to construct this statement that he made. And I mean, I don't know. I don't question his sincerity, like, unlike.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But if this thing winds up being another gaggle of congressional hand-wringers, and God, I don't mean to sound cynical, but if that's what it turns out to be, and we don't spend real the quality skull time talking about why the existing laws were not enforced, why the corporation was allowed to clog the MSHA administrative process, and why, in fact, the Mine Safety and Health Administration was absolutely crippled over the last 8 years, even though that's going to be labeled as partisan, if we don't do it, Haven, the simple answer is it is going to happen again and again.
No doubt.
And again.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
And, we're being promised hearings. More talk. No, I don't want talk. I want do. That's why I was talking about the concept of those federal mine marshals. Have guys in the hole who have the absolute authority to shut everything down and make Don Blankenship dance to his tune until he shapes up. And I'm not saying just send them into non-union mines. Send them into union mines, too. The difference is the union will work with them. Don Blankenship will tell his employees that they are communists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that this really is the only solution.
Well, it's a sensible solution. I mean, we have air marshals on the planes, and this guy who lit the cigarette in the bathroom, he came out, and all of a sudden there were 2-3 air marshals who were sitting next to him, just waiting to arrest him. I mean, and all of that, of course, is on the basis of what happened on September 11th. I was listening to, I can't remember his name, but the gentleman who has been on several shows, he wrote the book. Gosh, I can't remember his name, but he had mentioned that there were over, I think he said, 104,000 people who have died in mine catastrophes over the...
Are you talking about Jeff Biggers?
Yes.
Yeah. Good friend of the show. Yeah, that's the truth. 104,000. And for what?
104,000.
And a thousand miners, crippled miners, dead every year, Haven. Every year from black lung disease.
But this is kind of a country that reacts, that is reactionary, I guess you would say. Whether it's the right or the left, our leadership is reactionary. They're going to, it takes a catastrophe And once this catastrophe happens, and they're going to spring into action, and they're going to have meetings and hearings and that sort of thing, and come up with a statement, and then, of course, they run into, smack into the corporate buzzsaw, and that's the end of that.
Exactly.
It's
tough to stomach.
But that sense of, I mean, if we had a sense of perspective on this sort of thing, I mean, that's 104,000 people. That definitely, I mean, that's an industry that is begging for not just mind marshals on surveillance, but probation. You know, I mean,
the ability to shut down a deadly mind before it becomes deadly.
Exactly. And by now, I think we pretty much know what a deadly mind looks like. If we never, I mean, we should know.
For the most part, it is non-union. Mm-hmm. It is ill-maintained.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to remember that that entrance that the guys are going in there, the rescue crews and stuff, is relatively new. That is a big, big mine complex, Haven, and that's a relatively new entrance because Massey didn't want them wasting their time getting to the face. So they created a new entrance. And when you're doing that in the southern West Virginia coal fields, God only knows what you'll go through or tap into. This mine, and this is one of those numbers that it's really hard to get through get your head around, this mine produced 2 million cubic yards of methane gas per day. Now, how in God's name can you adequately ventilate that? 2 million cubic yards of methane gas per day. So.
Every day.
I mean, if that doesn't.
There was a guy on Democracy Now today. He was from South Africa, and I'm not sure. I don't think he was I'm not sure if he was a miner or not. But he was familiar with the mines in South Africa, and I think he was saying that. I mean, his heart went out to them, but he was just kind of like, "This is pretty unexpected for something like this to happen in America." I mean, they have their fair share of mining disasters in South Africa.
Well, then that means he doesn't understand America. I mean, I'm not trying to be a smartass or anything, but that means they don't understand America. And in fact, I'm glad that you brought up South Africa, because of all the dumb, stupid things the United States could do. Did you see this? The United States abstained on a vote by the World Monetary Fund to approve $3.75 billion in loans. The World Bank approved $3.75 billion in loans to help build a monster coal-fired power plant in South Africa.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's why the guy was on Democracy Now!
And here's the fascinating thing. The United States abstained by the vote. Abstained from the vote. Well, you know, we're not going to vote yes or no.
Right.
How hard is it to vote no? Britain and the Netherlands also abstained.
The corporations want them to vote yes.
People with morals want them to vote no.
It could be that the you know, ironically and tragically, what stopped them from voting yes on it was this catastrophe. I suppose. I don't know. I don't.
You know, the excuse given by Obiageli K. Eskewesley was, without an increased energy supply, South Africans will face hardship for the poor and limited economic growth. Access to energy is essential for fighting poverty and catalyzing growth, both in South Africa and the wider subregion. But how are you fighting poverty when you're poisoning the poor people? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I tell you, it's a challenge.
It's the same situation. Things have really not changed in South Africa, though, from what I'm hearing, from what I've read. Well, they've gotten actually worse for South Africans, and some of the people in the white power structure are kind of like, you know, wow, if we'd known ending apartheid would end up this well for us, we would have got rid of it a long time ago.
Exactly.
They've taken full advantage of it. But
Don Blankenship helped apartheid hang on.
Right.
What a guy.
And you mentioned him building a school or donating $1 million or something for a school.
Massey has pledged $1 million to help build a new Marsh Fork Elementary School away from that god-awful toxic waste dam and the coal prep plant where all the reporters are right now.
Well, I hate to badmouth that, but I'm rapidly coming to the conclusion that building schools is like the last refuge of scoundrels.
It may be, but this is something that so urgently has to happen before a situation similar to what Glenn mentioned earlier in the program in Aberfan comes up. These children are living on borrowed time at Marsh Fork Elementary. That dam that holds back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste is leaking at the toe. They are breathing poison from the 100 yards away coal prep plant every day. And if we don't do something, it's going to be a nightmare. Hey, Haven, I got to run on, but I hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Take it easy.
All right. Later. That's Haven calling from North Carolina. And here, I got to share this with you because it was a question I asked of horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. I said, I wonder if you might be interested in doing a long-distance diagnosis of Don Blankenship. There's a lot of footage of him at CNN these days and tons more on YouTube. I'd be curious to know your professional opinion of him. And Rick promptly wrote back, and he said, it's already done, and it's the same as I'm sure you've diagnosed him. Of course, with the understanding that I've not interviewed him. 301.7, antisocial personality disorder. A, pervasive pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others, as indicated by three or more of the following. See, you get three and you're done. One, failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behavior, as in buying judges and telling a newsman he will shoot him. There are laws saying one cannot do that. Four, irritability and aggressiveness, manhandling the ABC reporter. Five, reckless disregard for safety of self or others, the number of safety violations and the email telling workers to not obey orders to do safety work but to run coal bears this out. Well, that's three. However, here at the Rocco Rick-O-Matic, wait, there's more. Six, consistent irresponsibility, the number of safety violations and the email telling workers not to obey orders to do safety work but to run coal bears this out as well. And seven, lack of remorse, as indicated by being indifferent to or rationalizing having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another. I think he meets this one. What do you think, Bob? And Rick adds, you know, Bob, in the case of Blankenship, no matter how much money he has, you cannot take the white out of the trash. That was kind of what I expected, but I do love it when horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner is able to respond by citing chapter and verse. And coming up on the next Real American Stories with Sarah Palin on Fox.
Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Department Store Mannequin Dresser Upper.
Mr. Department Store Mannequin Dresser Upper.
You live the ultimate fantasy, spending your days surrounded by naked women who never speak.
Living the dream.
Wooden nubs, plastic no-nos, artificial hoo-has. You've handled more fake female parts than a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon.
They sure feel real.
Your hours are flexible. Even better,
so are the women you're undressing. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Mac Daddy of the mannequins. When it comes to undressing fake women, you're the real man. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Coming soon, next, on the Caribou Barbie. Real American stories only on Fox. And we will take a little break and then come back with more of your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
When you go on Devon drifts, you're stuck right out in nature. Forage in the forest like a primate. Using chopping tools and steel hot plates.
Means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement. We'll get started.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I don't heed the
battle call. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Baby down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone and Kelly have to lose that on the list and then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
No more war now.
Cut your flag, gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
16 minutes past the hour, and another reminder, I will be appearing. I will be heard. There we go. That's the verb I'm looking for. I will be heard on the Mike Malloy Show coming up, starting in the next hour. You'll have to wait and see when I show up. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike this week, and we will be discussing the mining disaster in West Virginia. I will also be being heard on the Leslie Marshall Show, syndicated live across America, as a guest there in the 9 o'clock Eastern Time hour of that program Monday evening after our first day of work at the AFL-CIO convention in Pittsburgh, and you want to be tuned in for that, too. This is going to be amazing. Only thing I have to do is shake whatever it is that's making me feel kind of crappy right now. Running a little fever, guts hurting. Sorry to, I'm not complaining. Just it is what it is. But if the stream suddenly goes silent, you'll know that Bob was otherwise engaged. I mean, this thing has hit me out of nowhere. But just cross your fingers and hope that that in fact that doesn't happen. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not remind you that coming up on the next Real American Stories with Mussolini, the Godzilla from Wasilla.
Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pit Crew Water Bottle Squirter. In a world of RPMs and MPGs, you're all about H2O.
H2O.
Sure, anyone can take a car apart and put it back together again. But not just anyone can squirt water.
You've got it in you.
Reach, squeeze, reach, squeeze. Precision timing. 1 inch off, and you've got a soggy driver and a potential squeegee situation.
Watch out, that's water.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Pit Crew Water Bottle Squirter, because as far as we're concerned, you're not just in the pits. You are the pits.
Mr. Pit Crew Water Bottle Squirter.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Only on Fox. And let's go straight away to the phones and see if you guys are actually there. Nope. No patience. Okay. Wow. This is a little bit scary because I'm feeling kind of like crap. But that's okay. We can we will muddle our way through this. If I start, I don't know, seeing bats or something, you'll know that there's a fever involved. I wanted to note to you also, if you go to headonradionetwork.com, our critic at large, Reverbo, has posted a new piece in the ongoing theme, A Cavalcade of Crazy. Question, what does it take to shut down a coal mine? And this is a magnificent piece that Reverbo has written. And you know what? You're going to see a picture of something that doesn't make a lot of sense when you go to the post, but you have to wait till you get to the end of it to find out what it really is. I suspect you will scream. So go to headonradionetwork.com, A Cavalcade of Crazy, and Reverbo's post, What Does It Take to Shut Down a Coal Mine? Let's move around a little bit. Let's try to go and do some other things. By the way, we've been having a lot of fun with Caribou Barbie's little TV show. For the first program in the adult 25 to 54 demographic, it was a what's that internet phrase? Epic fail. From start to finish, she lost 18% of her viewers. I don't think they were dying. I think they were dying laughing. You know, this is her dream job after all. It's kind of like what would happen if America had done the right thing and just made George W. Bush the commissioner of baseball. It was what he wanted. He didn't necessarily have to be allowed to screw up the entire United States of America. We could have let him be commissioner of baseball, and it's pretty hard to screw up baseball any more than it already is. And he could have sat in the stands and picked his nose and ate it like we've got video of him doing. But no. Now, first of all, I'm sure you all know about the scam. I gotta do something about this ringer. This is getting on my nerves. Good God, where are the bats coming from? No, the scam prom in, Itawamba County, Mississippi, where a little lesbian girl, and handicapped children were cruelly played upon by the school administrators, the students, the teachers, the community members, mothers, fathers. You want to know what's wrong with America? You look to Itawamba County, Mississippi. My God. Really? A prom is that important? That the most important thing in the world would be making sure that you punish and humiliate a child? Child? Really? You know, fire up the band. Party's over. But what do you want? That is in the widest part of the Bible Belt. It really, really is. And it is sickening. Well, you got to understand that part of the reason we have the problem with the little gay girl in Mississippi is because these churins keep figuring out all about the sex. Right? So Juneau County, Wisconsin, has figured out a way to deal with it. The district attorney there is a POS by the name of Scott Southworth. And apparently he's decided he knows more about what children should be taught about sex than professional educators. A new law has taken effect in Wisconsin. It is called the Healthy Youth Act. Took effect last month. Starting this coming fall, schools with sex education courses have to teach students medically accurate, age-appropriate information, including how to use birth control and prevent sexually transmitted diseases. The new law also requires the classes to include information about how to recognize signs of abuse and how alcohol can affect decision-making. I only had 12 beers and she looks pretty. You know, beer goggling. Friends don't let friends beer goggle. Of course, there is an opt-out provision where weird little fundamentalist parents who want to make sure that their daughters become mothers in the ninth grade or that their sons become fathers in the eighth get to opt their children out of it. But that's still not enough for Juneau County District Attorney Scott Southworth. Scott Southworth has sent a letter to every school in his district threatening to arrest, try, and convict any teacher who obeys the new law. Well, you want to bet this guy's been to a teabagging rally? Now, listen to the reasoning, if we dare call it that, for why he has done what he has done. If a teacher instructs any student age 16 or younger how to utilize contraceptives under circumstances where the teacher knows the child is engaging in sexual activity with another child, or even where the natural and probable consequences of the teacher's instruction is to cause that child to engage in sexual intercourse with a child, that teacher can be charged under this statute. Moreover, the teacher could be charged with this crime even if the child does not actually engage in the criminal behavior. Our teachers should never be put in this position. Remember how they called the hate crimes bill thought crimes? In other words, if a teacher teaches a child about a condom and the child thinks about having sex, the teacher, completely unable to affect any outcome except to provide basic scientifically accurate information, in the views of a guy who has got to be a strict fundamentalist goober, the teacher is guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Amazing. They walk among us. A statement from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services said, study after study has shown that abstinence-only education does not work. Well, it does work if you like to consider working being massive influxes of teen pregnancies. It works in that sense. You know, more babies for Jesus? Right. The Healthy Youth Act updates our standards to reflect the health risks teens face today. Ooh, science. Burn the witch! Meanwhile, Scott Southworth responded, in effect, the new law injects an intense amount of unnecessary politics into our human growth and development classrooms and places our teachers and children into a position of discussing extremely controversial issues that will likely conflict with the religious beliefs and values of most Juneau County families and deprive them of their precious bodily fluids. Oh, wait, I added that last part. You look on YouTube, and you can see there already is a significant amount of sexual activity going on among our youth. Duh! All the more reason to teach them how not to become pregnant. All the more reason to teach them how not to die. For a little bit of the old in-out. Jesus. What would you do if you were a teacher and this freak charged you with a crime? Lord God. Do I have the stomach to do the Casey Anthony case? I don't know. We'll see later. Right now, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Bang my head into the wall.
Yeah, that's one of them right there.
Word of God.
Yeah.
Did you get the article I sent you by Dave Lindorf?
I did indeed.
God. He called it.
Sure. Hard to miss.
But, you know, why don't we have blanket shit going down there working in the mine at 22 cents an hour?
Well, because first of all, he would get his fat ass killed. And he would probably get other people killed, too. That guy couldn't operate a continuous miner. That guy couldn't operate a man trip. He couldn't wire a light bulb in the mine without killing somebody. What he can do is sit around and move the beans and count the beans until he's figured out a way to turn it into a highly successful economic dodge.
I mean, these idiots are, you know, they haven't even paid their bloody fines. They shouldn't be open.
Some of those fines are delinquent. It's not like the appeal is over. Now they're delinquent. The Massey just refuses to pay.
Right. Well, you haven't proven we've done anything wrong.
And by the way, in case anybody's keeping score, this isn't the only one. Dozens more Massey mines have been cited as unsafe. About 41 other Appalachian Massey mines have racked up something like 2,074 safety violations since January, Cossack.
Jeez. Unbelievable. And how are they still all open? You know, if you were running a small business or I were running a small business and we had, you know, two of our three employees ending up getting hurt on the job, we'd be closed down.
Well, don't think that the miners are the only slaves in this state. Just because they're slightly better paid, most of the state legislature is slave as well.
Well, yeah.
And just so folks can know, the Dave Lindorf piece that you sent along from afterdowningstreet.org, just so folks can know, it turns out, and this is a little bit arcane because it goes into the realm of something called workers' compensation, which, unless you've ever been hurt on the job, is just eye-glazing rollback in the head's dull. But if you've ever been hurt on the job, it saved your ass, probably.
Correct.
West Virginia used to have a state-run single-payer workers' comp system. Governor Joe Manchin, the first thing he did when he got into office was to kill it and create a privatized or piratized single-payer system called Brick Street Insurance. Who came up with that? God knows. Well, in both the previous state-run and the current piratized version, companies can be, if they can show that they have sufficient assets on hand, companies can be what is called self-insured, and I'm sure you know what self-insured means.
Yeah,
that's where the company says, "Hey, you know, let it be on our heads. We'll pay for it if anything goes wrong."
Correct.
And then Massey was notoriously self-insured, and they would fight. I know it because I know people who were involved in it. Massey would fight something as trivial as a single prescription for an anti-inflammatory drug, okay? Not a joke. They fought everything, all the way to the Supreme Court. Made the claimant appeal all the way to the Supreme Court in any hope of getting justice, okay? And they did this under the theory of, well, you know, we're self-insured. We have to protect our self-insured insurance pool. Okay. Well, you already know. Cossack. Guess what happened about a month ago? That's right. Massey Energy went to Brick Street Insurance, and instead of being a self-insured employer for workers' comp purposes, Massey Energy bought workers' comp insurance from Brick Street.
What does this tell you?
So that when the workers' comp claims for death actions come to be paid, they will be paid by the insurance and not by the company itself. And then, here's the fun part, the cost of the premiums will be written off Massey's taxes as cost of doing business.
Oh, God. I'm speechless. I mean, you know, that kind of, in my mind, the way I look at things, that to me is premeditation. In other words, it tells me that they were expecting this. Maybe not this day, not this time, but they were expecting something.
Yeah, but here's the fun part. You can't raise it at trial.
No.
Because there is something called the collateral source rule. And it is literally such a heresy at trial that if the word insurance is mentioned in front of a jury, a mistrial is declared immediately. Kind of crazy, ain't it?
It's insane. It's insane. It makes no sense whatsoever. You know, there's something I wanted to bring up the other night when I called and didn't get to it. But you've heard of Tesla, obviously.
Sure.
And you realize that around the turn of the century, he had a way and demonstrated it of sending electricity without wires through the ground, and it worked. And he showed several of the honchos of the time, of several utilities, how this could be done. And they all said, thanks, but no thanks, because we can't meter, we can't make money off it, so forget about it.
Yep.
And the secret died with Tesla.
Well, not really. Not really. Because there are proposals out there for solar energy from space. And it does the same thing. It transfers solar energy from space to a ground station wirelessly.
That would help.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a big tether, yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, no space elevators here.
No, not yet.
You know, the one company that was discussed, I think, what is it, Pacific Edison or whatever, out in California, has talked some a little bit about this.
Well, it's about time we started doing something.
But as you know, as is always the case, the good of the people falls way, way, way behind, Cossack, the good of our investor class.
Correct. And that's one of the problems. I mean, you know, right now, Bob, we have such a compromised system. I can literally count on the fingers of one hand the number of legislators in Washington that have shown themselves at all to care about their own constituents. 99.9% of those on the Hill owe their fealty to the money.
You bet.
Yeah, and the money ain't us. I'm sorry.
No, you're not invited to the party, Cossack. Neither am I.
But, you know, why is it they need us to legitimate their so-called democracy?
Because that's the only way you maintain the charade. Yeah, but it is. I mean, and you know it.
Yeah, but
one of the things that Revervo mentions in his Cavalcade of Crazy article is that we have, you know, he's argued in the past that, you know, the bus is getting ready to leave the station, and by God, we will leave the knuckle walkers behind us if they don't want to come. We're not going to force them. And he kind of rethinks it in the new post at headonradionetwork.com. How, you know, what does it take to close a mine? But at the same time that we're thinking about this kind of stuff, you know, you, me, all of us, the Horn family and whatnot, at the same time that we're thinking about all of this, the crazy is out there doing crazier. I want to share a little bit of audio with you, if I may.
Sure.
I don't know if you realize this, but down in New Orleans, the Repiglican Party is having its Southern Repiglican Leadership Conference.
Oh, yeah.
They call themselves the most important Republican event outside the Republican National Convention. Well, guess who spoke there today? That's right, that purveyor of real American stories, Caribou Barbie.
Mussolini.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to hear the kind of crazy, the kind of stupid that Revervo is referring to in his piece and previous pieces, well, just you know, sit back, pour a scotch, you know, the handle a snake, you know, because you're not going to be okay when this is done.
Create a competitive climate for investment in renewables and alternatives that are economical and doable, and none of this snake oil science stuff that is based on this global warming Gore Gate stuff that came down where there were...
Did you hear what I just heard, Cossack? Because I'm not feeling real good, and I'm thinking I may have hallucinated, and I may have to just go out and run around in the yard. We should create a competitive climate for investment in renewables and alternatives. None of this snake oil science stuff. When's the last time anybody said snake oil science stuff? What is Latin for snake oil science stuff? Because I think that's what the church said to Galileo.
Exactly. I mean, for crying out loud, yeah, this person scares me. But even more... are the idiots that are applauding her.
Yes. Yes, you get it. You know, this is the if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there, does it make a sound? You know, if Sarah Palin talks in an empty room, is she still a blithering idiot?
Yes, but...
I would argue philosophically that she is, but that her idiocy is made manifest and manifold and you know, flesh made real... spirit made flesh, whatever, by the clapping idiots in the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was the same meeting where Bobby Jindal, you know, Piyush Bobby Jindal, stood up and said, it hurts our feelings to be called the party of
no. Well, then what are they?
Well, he said, Speaker Pelosi likes to call the Republicans the party of no. Some of us, we don't like that, the way that sounds. It hurts our feelings. Speaker Newt Gingrich said yesterday the Republicans need to be the party of yes, and he's right. And then in the very next breath, he exclaimed that the GOP isn't just the party of no. Instead, he said, the party of, it's the party of hell no.
The party of hell no.
Now, you know, I think I'm going to need a toddy when the show's over. I hope I'm sober when I get to the Molloy show. I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
Well, I'm gonna pour myself a
Yeah, don't tell me about the bats. Yeah, don't tell me about the bats. I'll see the bats soon enough. Poor bastard that I am.
Unbelievable.
Oh yeah. The loonies, you know, it's like some sort of twisted version of the X-Files. The loonies are out there.
Yeah, they're out there and they're running the show. That's the problem.
Or they're trying to get to where they do. You know, I can't wait to see the kittens with crocheted tails that they have when whatever milksop, milquetoast moderate Barack Obama nominates to be on the Supreme Court, because he ain't going to nominate anybody with any real fire.
Yeah, who he should nominate, right?
You know, which one?
Angela Davis.
Ha, 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 ha.
She's a lawyer.
Oh, that would, that, my God, Sarah Palin's head would explode. I mean, it would be Slim Whitman yodeling at the end of Mars Attacks, just all
exactly.
inside their little bubble space helmets. All these were pig licking.
Yep. And a whole bunch of the conservatives.
Oh, Lee Potter's got it. The truther is out there.
There you go.
He shoots. He scores. Hey, Cossack, have yourself a good night and a great weekend.
You too, Bob. Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's the Cossack calling from North Florida. And, of course, since we've been talking about her, by all means, let's hear the rest of stupid. Because, you know, you really hate to cheat yourself out of stupid.
There's revelation that some of these scientists were playing some political games, and I sued the feds over this. I sued the feds as governor for some bogus listing on the ESA. Just about got run out of town, of course, by the environmentalists. But now we feel a little bit vindicated because we're realizing through Gore Gate that...
Oh, my God. Has Caribou Barbie been reading it pays to enrich your word power in the Reader's Digest big print edition? I don't know. When Caribou Barbie reads and her finger runs under the word, do her lips move when she reads silently? You know, I want one of those little Martian, medical, surgical cameras on a wire. And I just want to watch her, anything, the Bible, the Dick and Jane go to the store, you know, whatever it is she's capable of reading. I just want to see the little moving finger under the words and watch the lips move. And the little ball of drool that rolls out of the side of her mouth. I just want, you know, because I guess I'm a glutton for punishment.
There was some snake oil science involved in the data collection there. The great energy innovation.
No, there wasn't. Of course, I'm telling you that, and you already know that, so I guess I'm just kind of wasting time. There was no snake oil science. The whole damn thing has been proven to be nothing more than a tempest in a teapot ginned up by the right wing, who are the wholly owned subsidiary of the filthiest corporations on planet Earth. Why am I yelling?
That will replace conventional resources. It's just not here yet. It's not here yet, but it will be someday. And until that day, we need our domestic resources to meet our needs. And that alternative, when it's discovered, it will be here and it will be America.
Oh, good God, we're still waiting for the alternative to be discovered. In Mussolini land, we still haven't discovered windmills. In Mussolini land, we still haven't discovered either active or passive solar. Sweet suffering God Almighty. No, someday we're going to find out. We're going to find out that we can power the whole earth on the left forelimb of a moose that I get to shoot from helicopters. Don't you know, you betcha.
Americans who find it. Americans will invent this next source. Because
it hasn't been invented yet. Jesus. You know, I told you last night, or night before last, I told you about the video that Matt Osborne shot, the amazing video that Matt Osborne shot at the teabagging rally in Huntsville, Alabama. And the idea that you had a bunch of repiglickins complaining about government spending standing underneath the space shuttle and next to, Saturn V rockets and Mercury's and Redstone's. And, you know, of course, the thing was done at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Irony is dead. Irony is lost on this bunch. Holy mackerel. But, Matt Osborne is right. He picked up that riff on something I said one night. Mars needs Republicans. These people have proven they have asserted that CO2 is good for you, that they do not need to breathe actual oxygen. They can separate it out from carbon dioxide, and I say let them. We need to get busy. I know Barack Obama is more in favor of the unmanned space exploration, but I think we do this country a great disservice if we do not sink significant research dollars into a manned space flight program that is directed toward allowing every God-blessed, soulless, motherless, brainless, repig-licking to go breathe CO2 on Mars. We just don't let them have rockets to fly back with. You know, because that's me, and I am, of course, mean. Something else I wanted to share with you real quick that sort of goes along the lines of what Matt was shining a light on in Huntsville. Our buddy Tosh wrote in earlier, a couple of days ago. He said, you do realize that the next stop after Huntsville was even more hypocritically dependent on the federal government than Huntsville. I mean, the space shuttle is a visible sign of American exceptionalism, right? Exceptionally complex and expensive. Here's what I mean about Nashville. Consider these questions. What portion of the Nashville economy derives from the country music business? A lot. What portion of the Nashville music business depends on selling CDs and other music licensing? A lot. What happens to music licensing without the federal government excess known as the Copyright Office? Not good things. What happens to music licensing without the federal government protecting the private intellectual property rights, like music, software, etc., in trade deals through the world? Nothing good. While the PTO, Patent and Trademark Office, is in the Constitution, but trade deals without union provisions don't need IP licensing provisions, except to protect rich conservative interests. This is where the true hypocrisy strikes. And I would extend Tosh's argument, and I would say that there is nowhere that these teabagging can go that they won't be standing right smack dab in the middle of the biggest argument against their entire philosophy that can be raised against them. Their damn buses are running on socialized highways. You know, they're not. Where's the electricity coming from that they hook up to? Oh, well, we've got generators that are fueled on diesel or gasoline. Well, good for you. And how much corporate welfare do we give to the oil industry? Just asking. Tosh later said, in regard to something that Matt said earlier about. And this is something I've been meaning to get to. It's important. About Matt's argument about offshore drilling and so forth. Tosh says, having seen Obama's game on health care reform, I tend to agree with Matt Osborne. What we see today is not necessarily what will happen when the story is done and the songs are sung. Did you see the Move On email about what their membership had done to get health care reform over the threshold? It was amazing. While the Tea Partiers were out making a lot of noise, Move On acquired 7.8 million petition signatures for health care reform, raised almost $15 million, and got a couple million volunteer hours pledged to HCR supporters. I estimate that my critter could receive the equivalent of 18 full-time staffers worth of extra volunteer labor. Worth thinking about. It absolutely is. And Tosh asked earlier today, he said, it's not democracy that right-wingers hate, teabaggers and the like. It's America. America itself. We were founded as a country by the people, for the people. The government is in this country is us. We delegate the daily execution of these functions to elected, appointed, and commissioned persons who are paid to exercise our will. At its core, the people are the government. When right-wingers claim to hate government, they are saying they hate the U.S. They are afraid of the U.S. and not the United States. They hate us. They are afraid of us. we could decode Ronald Reagan's famous 9 words from the 1980 election as, I'm from the American people, and we're here to help. How's that one for one that'll sort of make your head turn around a little bit? Let's go to the phones before we close up shop for this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Oh, hey, Fancy, what's up?
Hey, just wanted to mention Janet Napolitano would be an excellent appointee.
My biggest problem with Janet Napolitano is her age, and I don't mean to be negative about that, but we have to take into account that George W. Bush nominated two of the youngest possible fascists that he could find. And whoever Barack Obama puts on the bench has got to be able to be there outmaneuver, outlast the rats on the Supreme Court.
I just want to tell you how much I miss her in Arizona. And as you know, she was our governor. And as we've talked often about those wonderful boys and girls in the state Congress, the legislature, and House of Representatives, and they just happily voted this and that and something else, and then Janet would veto it. And she was protecting us from all these wonderful ideas.
From to crazy?
Oh, and now that she's gone. And see, we don't have a lieutenant governor. The Arizona Secretary of State replaces a governor when they go. So we got Jan Brewer, who is a Republican. And, you know, as foolish as it is, she's letting all this craziness from the state Senate go by. So, you know, we're cutting down off schools. You know, none of them have kids in school. What the hell? Going to educate people? And certainly the state, our equivalent of Medicaid, which is called Access. And, you know, why should we insure little kids? Please. But they have passed some very important bills. One is that you have the right to carry a firearm, a sidearm, into a bar now.
Yeah, or a coffee shop, or church.
But you can't carry one into Congress. I think this is totally unfair. I certainly want to wear my sidearm when I go visit the legislature.
Well, you know, you got to wear your gun when you're walking into the Church of the Holy Blue Steel.
I told you the story that we were at a concert, a junior high orchestra concert. And, you know, somebody, you know, excuse me, is going down the aisle, going, you know, to sit in the middle of the auditorium past us. And the guy's wearing a pistol. And my companion turns, he says, boy, I hope he likes the Mozart. And you think, you know, why the hell would you wear a sidearm to a junior high concert?
Oh, because you're convinced
it's
that your penis is short and, you know.
Well, that's all you can assume is that this is a highly...
You know, dude shows up in a Hummer.
Adequate parts.
Yeah, shows up in a Hummer wearing a gun. You know, all suspicions are confirmed.
But Janet is really, she's a fine lady. She's a breast cancer survivor. She's tough. And she loves local sports, and she was turning up at the basketball games and the baseball games. And she had a wonderful way of dealing with people.
Well, Fancy, it's interesting you would mention that. I talked earlier about that. I was talking with Sandra, and I talked about that wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Old Spice body wash ad that started in the Super Bowl. It has just taken the world by storm. It was a piece of pure genius with this really, you know, and I can say this because I'm secure in my sexuality, really good-looking dude who's standing in a bathroom shower saying, you know, look at your husband, now look at me. Now back at your husband, now back at me. Your husband's not me, but if he stopped using lady-scented body wash, he could smell like me. And here's this exquisite-looking guy with this beautiful... with this beautiful accent that he based, I'm a geek. He based it on Adam West's voice.
Okay.
And here's how he tested out the voice. He was a former, he's a former NFLer, and more importantly, a former Sun Devil. And he called his old buddy Jake the Snake Plumber to try the voice out on him before he went to the audition.
That's quite good.
And by the way, I heard the best piece of sports trivia I have ever heard today. With the announcement of the retirement of Justice Stevens. Almost said, yes. Potter Stewart, I don't know why. John Paul Stevens. He was present in the stands at Wrigley Field the day that the Babe called his shot.
Holy smokes.
How do you like that?
Wow. Awesome.
And so we're hearing that and on the radio, and Ferg looks at me and goes, what does he mean, called his shot? And I love those moments, Fancy. Well, son, you see, back in the day, and you know, Ferg's eyes roll back, glaze and roll back in his head, and he goes, oh, no, he's going to teach me again.
It's an awesome thing.
It's stunning.
Awesome.
Hey, Fancy, I have to roll on. I wish I'd gotten to you earlier. I'm sorry we didn't have more time.
No, I just wanted to say yay for Janet. Janet Napolitano's a heck of a Democrat, and I'm proud of her. I wish we had her back. Because Arizona sure benefited from it.
Yeah, because it's a right-wing wonderland right now, you know.
Oh, God, it's crazy out there. It's just spooky crazy. And I live in Tucson, which, you know, and I come from Texas, and I always say, well, Tucson is the Austin of Arizona. We're the liberal place. But the rest of the
But honest to God, it is a little bit nuts, Fancy, because what kind of assumptions are you making about the stupidity of your constituents when you can stand up and say, I never claimed to be a maverick, when you authored a book called Education of a Maverick?
I've talked to you about this. McCain is my pen pal. He and I have been exchanging letters for 30 years.
No, sweet Jesus.
You know, and I write him and I say, listen, I know you don't agree with me on this particular point, but you also represent me. And you have to have some respect for those of us that have a different opinion. And then I get a letter back from him, and he said, with all due respect, you're totally wrong. And I'd say them, I'd have quite a collection of pretty much the same kind of letter. And, you know, and our boy Kyle is just as good. Ooh. And I know.
Whoops, gotta go get the net. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. It's exactly. It's exactly.
All have a good trip. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have some talk time and stuff. I'm going to be hopefully talking with John Fox a little bit about making that happen.
If I've
got the energy at the end of the day, I'll try to do a show or at least an hour or so. You know, Guy, me, Rick, sitting, you know, three chubby white guys sitting around rapping. You know.
Hey, there's a need. You know, build it and we'll come.
Here, here. Fancy, you take care.
Bye-bye now.
Have a wonderful weekend. Bye now.
Bye, good.
Hey, thanks, everybody, for helping me make it through. You know what? I took an ibuprofen right before I came out of the Hour 3 opener. Fever is going away, and I am feeling manifestly better. So it is time for you all to go over to Mike Malloy, guest hosted for this Friday night by none other than the inimitable Brad Friedman. And you know what? I'll be joining you a little bit later. My own darn self, okay? Sounds good. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. Thanks to you who contribute your hard-earned dollars to make sure this all continues. I am proud to say that we are halfway to our fundraising goal for April. And here it is, only the 9th. We got there. We got there 6 days ahead. You know what would be nice? It would be nice if we could just get there, you know, get to the promised land of April, and I could shut up and not do a pitch for another 2 weeks. Do you have any idea how good that would make me feel? Probably make you feel pretty good, too. But thank you to all of you who do continue to make this happen. I want to remind you that there are, in fact, a few remaining for the love of West Virginia prints out there, handmade and numbered by our dear friend Diane. A $75 contribution will get you one, or get you one that you can send as a gift. Postage is included in the process. Just go to headonradionetwork.com and click the icon, or just send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or PayPal it that way, and send me a note saying, I want a print. Okay? Thanks to everybody behind, well, not behind the scenes, they're as in your face as they can get in the chat room, on the website. Thanks to our web mistress, Sue. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, who keep the website fresh with content. Thanks to our correspondents, Reverbo with the Cavalcade of Crazy, Sue with the ranting keyboard, and Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent at Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk going all the way back to 2002. Thank you very much. There wouldn't be any liberal talk if it wasn't for Ben Birch. That's not hyperbole. And finally, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. It is an amazing privilege to work with such determined, courageous people. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! past the hour. This is Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob. The week is at an end. And we got 3 hours to work everything out. Sorry about last night. A couple of things combined to make life a little bit difficult. On the one hand, the connectivity monster was on top of me. And on the other, my youngest daughter was busy having her appendix out. So I'm a little less than fresh as a daisy right now. I will beg your indulgence. Who am I kidding? I'm zonked. I need sleep. For those of you who are wondering, she did great. She passed through the surgery with flying colors. She was adored by the staff there. When they wheeled her into her room after the surgery, as she began to sober up, she said, "Where's my gift basket?" Yeah, my 13-year-old wants swag, baby. Even if it's hospital swag.